Factopia. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Innovation Center Danmark, Messecenter Herning og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia.
Tektopia.
Good morning, sir. Since Brexit, you're no longer allowed to take certain foods to Europe, like meats, fruits, vegetables, fishes, those kinds of stuff.
This has been the impact of Brexit so far. Paperwork, long delivery times, and higher prices.
Welcome to the Brexit, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Britain's departure from the EU has triggered the biggest change in trade since it joined the bloc 48 years ago.
Tektopia.
Briter, som stoppes i tolden og får konfiskeret varer, som de ikke længere må tage ind i EU efter Brexit. Ja, det kan man se i det her britiske nyhedsklip, og det er blot en af de mange ting i en hverdag uden for EU, som britiske statsborgere skal vende sig til. Men nogle af dem har forberedt sig bedre end andre. De har for eksempel fået sig et digitalt statsborgerskab i det lille EU-land Estland.
We had a lot of campaigns in UK recently as well, and a couple of like past 3-4 years now since they decided to leave the European Union, and many business holders were very very concerned what will happen now. How can I still do business with European Union? And we had a solution for them, because right now if they register themselves as the cardholders of e-residency, they can just also change their company and village Estonia by using the card, and they can still operate in UK physically, but their business is just registered to Europe, and they can still continue doing things in the same way, and no other regulations would apply for them, like in UK businesses, but the same ones that were before. And I guess we did a very big favor for UK people by doing this.
I denne udgave af Tektopia, der besøger vi et af verdens mest gennemdigitaliserede samfund, nemlig Estland.
My name is Annette Numa, and I'm working as a digital transformation advisor at the Estonia Briefing Center, and we are currently at the Briefing Center rooms, which is like an innovation hub where we collect all the information about digitalization in Estonia, and where we host delegations from all across the world, and introduce them and this digital story and how our society has been built, by very specific details and of course also the interest from our delegations. Usually is very different, so we can cover topics from e-health sector to cybersecurity or e-education, whatever you name it.
Min kollega Rolf Ask Clausen har talt med Annette Numa, der er Digital Transformation Advisor, det vil sige hun er rådgiver i digital forandring hos e-Estonia, hvor man opsamler den estiske erfaring med digitalisering og IT, og formidler den viden videre til andre lande og til kommuner og offentlige instanser. Baggrunden for den pludselige britiske interesse, det er Estlands e-citizen borgerkort. Alle kan få et borgerkort og gøre de 1,3 millioner estere selskab, uanset hvilket hjemland man har. Det giver ret til en bankkonto og til at oprette en virksomhed til at ansætte mennesker til at administrere på afstand, om man så må sige, til at betale skat. Og det er attraktivt, hvis man vil etablere sig i Estland. Det giver dog ikke stemmeret og andre borgerrettigheder, men man er etableret i et EU-land med en virksomhed.
It's for foreign people. It's called e-residency. So this is a card for everyone from all across the world who want to run business remotely, and especially as we see today by the time of Corona and pandemic, that people need to have ways to do things remotely, and people like to travel much more and so on. So if they want to run their business in the European Union, then registering themselves as an e-residency card holders, they can get the card, which is very very similar to the ID cards that we have here, and we'll give them basically the same rights, obviously not to vote and to be a citizen of Estonia, but they are the e-citizens who can run business by using the solutions, pay taxes, employ people, they can register their business and find customers, like whatever, again, sign all the documents that are linked to the business. So basically this will give them a chance to run a full remote business in the European Union by not having to be physically in Estonia, so that they can choose the country where they want to live in.
Men hvordan startede alt det her? Men tillad mig at skrue tiden tilbage og bruge min egen personlige historie i den forbindelse. I 1992 researchede jeg til min afgangsopgave på Journalisthøjskolen i Aarhus, og jeg ville gerne til Estland, der lige var blevet selvstændig. Jeg ville skrive om deres overgang til demokrati og markedsøkonomi, fordi de havde valgt en benhård og meget liberal model, som jeg fandt ganske interessant. Og så havde de også et ret stort problem med en russisk minoritet, der udgjorde næsten halvdelen af befolkningen. Der var en del kriminalitet og Wild West-tilstande i landet, men også store håb for fremtiden. Estland havde siden 2. verdenskrig været en del af Sovjet. De havde simpelthen været besat, og nationen var mere eller mindre udslettet. Mange estere var flygtet, og rigtig mange var også blevet deporteret til Gulag i Sibirien. Jeg kom i kontakt med nogle folk på Handelshøjskolen i Aarhus, der havde adgang til de diskussionsgrupper, som den estiske diaspora havde på nettet, altså de landflygtige estere. De diskuterede, hvordan de ville genrejse deres nation efter årtiers sovjetdiktatur. De var flygtet fra deportation, en ødelagt økonomi og fra undertrykkelse. Og nu sad de, eller måske rettere deres børn i Vesten, og drømte om at indføre demokrati, egen valuta og centralbank i deres gamle hjemland. Det var nye tider. De sad i Sverige og USA som flygtninge eller børn og børnebørn af flygtninge, og de planlagde genrejsningen af deres nation over nettet. Jeg havde ikke noget modem dengang, og jeg kendte kun til nettet for sådan nogle bulletin board systems, det man kalder for BBS'er, som jeg havde besøgt for at skrive om hacker og cyberpunk og teknomusik og sådan nogle ting. Men de flinke folk på Handelshøjskolen, de downloadede en masse diskussioner på nogle disketter til mig, og så satte jeg mig en weekend med den her guldgruppe af informationer og kontakter og pløjede mig igennem den. Og alt det, de diskuterede her, det ville jo i dag foregå på platforme som Facebook, Telegram eller Zoom. Men i 1992, der foregik det på BBS. Det var her, de planlagde en ny nation. Så på en måde, så er den digitale nations DNA vævet tæt sammen med det fysiske land, der ligger lige syd for Finland.
So first of all, we have to go back in history for a very long time. In 1991, when Estonia regained its independence, we were under Soviet Union occupation for way too long time. But of course, then we were eager to make a change happening, and we realized that we were lacking of money, and we had so many problems in Estonia back in 1991, and we were just urgently looking for solutions that could solve the problems that we were facing. And I was very clear that we couldn't continue doing things in the same way that everyone else had been doing. And we needed to find a different way to go. And luckily, our decision makers back at that time had some technology background already. And they said, but what about if we just try to use technology in order to get rid of corruption and to try to decrease the level of the cost? And we really had a small budget back in that time. So it was taking many, many risky decisions from the government side, but having a very young government was one of the biggest advantages that we could ever have, because these guys were willing to take very, very risky decisions, and they had a courage. And then since 1994, when the first document was already drafted to the parliament, we have been building these digital solutions. I mean, of course, 1994 was completely different time, but it's been a long way. And since 1994, we currently have 99% of our public services accessible online. And the only things that we do still on paper is getting married and divorced. And this is pretty much it.
Men en ting er at sidde i udlandet og kommunikere på internettet. En anden ting er at vende tilbage til et land, hvor infrastrukturen og økonomien er smadret, og tiden på mange måder har stået stille under sovjetstyrets undertrykkelse.
It was completely different time when we think about back in 1994. It was a year when I was born. And so back at that time, only 500 people in Estonia had mobile phones. So you can just imagine that was crazy what we did. Of course, the very first thing that I always say to policymakers is that make internet working and accessible in every part of your state, because that's where one country should start. And this is what we did. And second step, which is even more important, is to provide education when it comes to the ICT sector. So we provided ICT education already in high school. Currently, it's already implemented in kindergarten, for example. They are doing robotic classes in a kindergarten. And of course, also elderly people that have to be educated too, right? So this is where we focused, education, internet connection, and then working very closely with banking sector. We established the ID cards in the year 2002, and in the year of 2000, and in the year 2000 we could already declare the taxes online. So it was step by step building different services and testing it out, how people would react for that. Are they missing something? Are they missing knowledge or anything? So it's been a very long and hard way, but I'm happy where we.
Det elektroniske ID-kort er et omdrejningspunkt i den digitale nation Estland. Men hvad kan kortet egentlig?
So ID card has all my life on it in that sense. So I always love to my foreign friends that if you would ask me to show what kind of cards do I carry with me, I don't even carry my credit card anymore because I can do the Apple Pay and things like that. And so all I need to carry in my bag usually is my ID card. So this is my driving license and this is my loyalty card in different shops. All my medicals, my prescriptions are fully based also on my ID card. I travel with a card, also loyalty card in shops, a library card. So basically everything that I want to do, and if I need to identify myself somewhere, then the only card is ID card that works for that. So it's like, again, it has everything on it, and it's my entire life. So maybe also an important thing about the ID card here is that it's a compulsory document. So there is no possibility that I could say that I don't want to have that, because you need to have that if you want to identify yourself. So.
Borgerkortet, det er påbudt alle estiske borgere, ligesom vores gule sygesikringsbevis er, men det kan meget mere. En af grundene til, at det er interessant for eksempel virtuelt landflygtige briter, det er, at det kan bruges til at underskrive juridisk bindende kontrakter.
You can sign the documents there, you can vote online with a card. Again, it will give you possibilities to do everything. But we do not need to have a passport here. So you can choose in a way that if you want to have a passport, of course you can get one from our police and border guard board if you travel outside of the European Union. But the ID card is mandatory. Passport is not. So that's the difference there.
Og når vi nu er i gang, så lad os dykke lidt dybere ned i det estiske borgerkort.
Me as an Estonian citizen, I have such thing, if I log into the system using my mobile ID, smart ID, or my just physical electronic ID card, I have a thing called data tracker. And under my data tracker, I can see exactly at what time of the day, which organization, what part of my information, and which conditions we're using. So I have this overview 24/7. So there is no government agency or any private business who can access my information without me getting to know about that. And I think this is the most unique thing that we could provide to people. That's where the trust has been built. Because I'm always saying that I feel like I have the power in my hands, not the other way around. The power of my information is in my hands, and the data belongs to me. The government is just storing my information, but provides me a possibility to make sure that no one is accessing my information if they don't have a permission to do so. And by using the data exchange platform DxRoad, again, the access to the information is very limited. There has to be mutual agreements from both of the sides in order to exchange any information. Banks just can't go and check my medical records for fun, because this is none of their business. But of course, when I talk about different doctors, then they can see my medical records.
Men der er en stor forskel på eufori i 1994 på genopbygning i år 2000 og så på 2021. I dag er der udbredt skepsis over for at mistro til digitale løsninger, som indsamler og behandler store mængder data om borgerne. Så hvordan bevarer en gennemdigitaliseret stat sine borgers tillid?
Of course, it's very different when we talk about the private sector, which is much harder to manage and to regulate than in public sector. Trust remains the key element in our society, and we've been always saying that everything has to be as transparent as possible. And again, it comes to the education. If I have had conversations with people who don't trust these systems or are just like concerned about what's happening, I love to have these conversations and to understand why they are concerned about these things. And usually, I mean, at the end of the conversation, I have realized that they're just lacking of knowledge. If they do have a knowledge, they trust these things much more than people who don't have the knowledge. So obviously, again, we have to talk about things openly. How what's the background? And if something happens, we have to communicate things in the right way to people so that they would see that we're not hiding anything. But of course, again, cybersecurity still remains important there, and we can't afford to have mistakes in cyberspace. And I never get tired of saying that. But of course, I mean, private sector companies have to work very closely together with public sector, and hopefully we will have some regulations also by the European side. How do we use the data? Who has access to the data? On which conditions? So this has to be regulated by the European side, because we all know that Europe is taking a little bit different approach than the rest of the world. When we think about China or US, their regulations about data are completely different than in the EU. This is why I love to live in European Union, because we have GDPR regulations and everything, how to store someone else's data. And it's great to see that Europe is respecting the privacy of people. And I'm pretty sure this will stay as one of the most important things also for EU in the next couple of years and in the future in 10, 20 years. But definitely, when I talk about trust, then you need to make sure that everyone are aware how things have been done, and just providing this knowledge and understanding is in my opinion like the most important thing.
Tech-topia. Men hvis man er en digital stat, så ændrer spillereglerne for mange andre ting sig også. I foråret 2007 der blev alle offentlige instanser i Estland udsat for et voldsomt cyberangreb, formodentlig for Rusland, som man har et anstrengt forhold til på grund af fortidens besættelse og det store russiske mindretal, der stadig bor i Estland. Angrebet kom til at betyde et meget stærkt fokus på cybersikkerhed i Estland.
It's definitely not a new thing. I mean, cybersecurity has been here for everything. But of course, when we think about the time of pandemic, the number of attacks have been very much increasing because everyone are operating online right now. And there is many, many organizations that provide critical infrastructure providers. So we have to be aware that cybersecurity is linked to every single sector these days. And we have to again put the entire effort to make sure that this is stable and safe place to operate. So what we are currently doing, I would say what has changed now recently is that we are now focusing a lot more on like international cyberspace, because we know that cyber attacks know no borders. So it's something that we need to fully work together. And we are so happy that some very important organizations such as CCDCOE, which is NATO cybersecurity headquarters, is based in Tallinn, Estonia, so that we can work together and establish new frameworks and find ways how to protect the cyberspace by international level. And of course, also Estonia is now the member of United Nations Security Council, which is again something very essential to us. And we're currently suggesting to have a common framework where we would also have exactly written which consequences apply when one country does an attack to another country, because there is still no clear understanding. So we fully think that cyber attacks can have a larger impact on people and society than a usual crime can have. So that's where every country should be focusing on.
E-borgerkortet, det var det første skridt på vejen til at skabe det digitale statsborgerskab. Det har sidenhen ført til, at Estland ikke alene bliver studeret og kopieret af andre lande, men landet har også udviklet sig til at være en slags app store for offentlig IT, fortæller Annette Numa.
So what we do in Estonian Briefing Center is that we are this kind of, I would say, the rooftop organization for all different IT companies who have been developing all different solutions. And if a delegation comes over here, they come 100% always with their interest. Either it's building a school system or prescriptions or I don't know, improving their cybersecurity aspects. They can come over here, and that's the place where they can also have in-person meetings with these companies, and they can start discussing how to build the same things in their place. Maybe they want to buy the consulting services from us. So basically, I would like to say that this is like a store, like an app, like an Apple store or app store, where we can just jump over here and you're like, okay, I need to have these solutions and we will help you to, like, in that sense, like, download these things, but of course together with the help from our ICT companies and support from the government.
Og det er ikke kun briter på flugt fra Brexit, der kigger forbi Estonia. Også danskere har lagt vejen forbi centret i den estiske hovedstad Tallinn.
Denmark, like people from Denmark, have been visiting us very often, very very often, and I'm personally a very big fan of Danish people because they are very friendly and they know exactly what they're here for. And especially we have had many people from different municipalities, which is very great because we know that also municipalities need different ICT solutions in order to again lower the cost level or to make the system more efficient and bring much more customer experience to the people who live in the cities or towns. So they usually come over here also just to hear what we have been doing and if they could also copy something, or again, if they could buy something from Estonian companies, or maybe we can work together with some kind of project. So yeah, it's been always a pleasure to share the experiences and to see that Denmark has chosen a way to make their citizens as the key element there, or priority, and we very welcome these ideas, and we are always very open to work together.
Fra frihed til digital frontløbernation. Hvad står der i det næste kapitel for Estonia?
For us, it's all about being more proactive in a way, so that we would like to be the ones who are reaching out to people proactively, especially when we talk about Estonian citizens here. So we don't want them to be reaching out to us by asking for access to some services, but we would like to use a lot of different technologies, such as AI will be something very essential in the future, so that technology could do decisions and just remind people things by themselves. Not that there has to be a human being reminding people things or contacting them and so on. So we very much wish that our public sector workers and servants could be focusing on more important tasks than ever before, so that they wouldn't be dealing with very time-consuming tasks anymore, but technology could be replacing, I would say, the annoying tasks, and we could start focusing on innovation and building new ideas and new development. So this is where I see this going. But of course, also we're gonna have much more work, because right now also the pandemic time has showed that there is a need for solutions in e-health sector, and Estonian company Kartime is currently developing together with World Health Organization a solution called a vaccine card. So next time you're going to come over here to Estonia, you need to be vaccinated. Then you have a vaccine passport on your phone or anywhere else where there is a QR code that can prove that you have been vaccinated. So this is the future. We're going to move all the way online. And as I see from other countries, the time of corona crisis have been like a wake-up call for them, saying, hey, it's time to start this transformation. It's already too late, but if you're going to do this today, you can win from this. So I do hope that every country will understand that now or never. right now the focus in when I'm thinking about 10 years ahead will be on environment a lot. And I know this is very important also in Denmark. We already have self-driving buses operating here in the streets. And again, we're going to start making smarter decisions that will do good for the entire world and for the entire like society and our environment. So this is where I see things going in a way. And new technologies, again, can give us more time and more freedom and much more less stress in that sense. And we can come up with much better ideas, obviously. So I see this moving towards that way. Of course, there is always a risk. If are we going to just do everything online and lose all the human contact? I don't think so. Because what we have seen now in 2020 is that people miss to have these human contacts, and this is going to stay. But just like these annoying things, we're going to get rid of them, and we can just use our time much more I would say smarter, and I'm very excited to see where this is going.
Og det fortalte altså Annette Numa, der er digital transformationsmedarbejder i Estlands hovedstad Tallinn. Og det fortalte hun til min kollega Rolf Ask Clausen, der er på besøg derovre, og der kommer flere historier fra Estland, fordi når man har sådan et gennemdigitaliseret samfund, så har det jo også en indflydelse på forretningsmodeller og hvilke virksomheder, der bliver etableret i sådan et land, og hvordan man kombinerer forskning og forretning og digital fremdrift osv. Så det er, hvad skal man sige, lige lukket ned i alle de kerneområder, som Techtopia beskæftiger sig med. Så der kommer mere fra den kant.
Techtopia.
I denne her uge, der har vi også modtaget et podkort fra Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
Det kan meget godt være, at vi her i den forløbende uge har hørt, at fødselstallet falder markant i den vestlige verden. Helt op til 50% i de europæiske lande, siden covid-19 ankom for et år siden. Det giver ganske vist et dyk i antal fødsler, men det rokker altså ikke ved en af de globale udfordringer, vi ikke taler så meget om, men som førhen lå øverst på dagsordenen, nemlig overbefolkning. Den er nok blevet fortrængt af klimadagsordenen, men vi skal lige huske på, at de to ting hænger meget nøje sammen. Så i ugens transformator skal vi tælle kloden i mandtal og se på de overraskende prognoser, der er dukket op for klodens befolkningstal. Det er noget, der får indflydelse på både magtbalancer og klima. Men der skal også være plads til nørde, så vi skal se på energimulighederne i universets letteste atom, brinten. Lyt med i Transformator.
Ja, du har lyttet til Techtopia. Du kan finde mere information om podcasten på techtopia.dk, hvor vi også har et arkiv og tidligere podcast. Jeg skal måske nævne, at det her det er simpelthen podcast nummer 180, så der er nok at dykke ned i. Du kan også diskutere teknologi med andre lyttere i vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Techtopia Backstage. Så kan du følge os på Twitter på techtopia.dk hedder den. Og du kan følge med på Instagram på vores Techtopia-konto der. Der laver vi sådan en masse små sjove videoer. Er der andre steder, du kan følge Techtopia? Jeg kan ikke komme i tanke om nogen, men jeg synes, du skal tegne abonnement på podcasten i din foretrukne podcast-app, så du ikke kan glippe nogen afsnit, og så vi også kan få nogle flere lyttere. Og det indebærer selvfølgelig også, at du skal fortælle alle dine venner og familie, som sidder derhjemme og super keder sig under hele coronakrisen, at de bare skal lytte til Techtopia. Dyk ned i arkivet, find en spændende udsendelse, som interesserer dig, og så lyt løs. Og når det er sagt, ja, så er der vel bare tilbage at sige, at Techtopia bliver hver uge produceret af mig. Jeg hedder Henrik Føns, og jeg får hjælp af Veronica Wollin og Sabrina Andersen. Og ja, vi kører løs igen på næste mandag, så på genhør.
Techtopia.
Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi, udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Ugeavisen Ingeniøren, med støtte fra Innovation Center Danmark, Messecenter Herning og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia.
Tech-topia.